Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Everyone, and welcome to Longbox Heroes episode 328. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, big man?
All the other shows still mess up and say Leonard.
Well, I know who you are. I knew you before you were Leonard.
Right. You're one of the few.
That's right. I was in on the ground floor. I'm grandfathered in, so I'm good.
Well, let's not go crazy and say that you're good.
No. Whoa, pump the brakes. Yeah, that's a good idea.
No, but it's still so funny when I hear the other shows and I'm like, hey, you know, it's okay to call me Joe now because I'm not that person and haven't been for the last 90 days or so.
There should be a Joe counter, like just a constant counter since you've been him. Since you let him out.
Well, again, today, as of this recording, is about 90 days.
Oh.
If I was under some sort of contract that I left, usually you're not allowed to go anywhere or do anything or say anything untoward for 90 days.
Ah, gotcha. I didn't know that. That's more information I didn't want. I mean, I just learned.
Enough about me and my nonsense, Todd. What do we have to discuss on the show here today?
That's right. We have new crossovers announced, and it's a secret. They're all a secret. Overhauls to digital codes and a new creative team and what that means to certain things. We have free digital books and sales, con news, what we read last week, which I think we both read two different things, the rise and fall of Captain Atom for me and the Unstoppable Wasp for you.
Right, new, fresh stuff discussed in the What We Read Last Week section.
That's right. And then we have what we're looking forward to this week. And at the end of the show, for Joe and or Todd and Joe have issues, is Swamp Thing 21, The Anatomy Lesson. A kind of famous book that was printed once.
A groundbreaking comic, one would say.
What? Oh, I don't know. And I would say that's an evergreen issue.
Oh, boy.
Because it's Swamp Thing. Get it? See what I did there?
Well, we'll get into all that toward the end of the show, as Todd mentioned. Let's get into the news. For the last several weeks, we had joked about one of the upcoming Marvel events that was being solicited as ?
Redacted.
Redacted. Here's the prelude to Redacted. Get this trade that we're not going to tell you what's collected in it or what's involved or so on and so forth. So it came out that it's going to apparently be a Captain America crossover involving the Nick Spencer Captain America books and I'm sure other stuff as well.
That's right. And it's called Secret Empire.
Secret Empire, yes.
So we've had Secret Wars and then we had Civil War II. So now we have a secret empire. Now we need a civil something after this one.
Next one is the Star Wars Marvel Universe crossover called Civil Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, my goodness. I would read that.
I know you would.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of those ones where we talked last week about all the crossovers and the history of the crossovers in both Marvel and DC. And how our mileage varied on those books. And I'm still reading the two Captain America books by Nick Spencer. And if this is just going to kind of fit in nicely with those, you know, it's not three or four or five extra books that I'll have to pick up. It might be one extra book. And this seems to be at least 2 years in a row now that Marvel is doing this sort of where they do their big crossovery thing kind of late summer into the following year. And they do like this little mini crossover. And again, you know, they still claim it's the biggest crossover of all time. But this is kind of as Inhumans vs. X-Men is about to wrap up, which is also the biggest crossover of all time. And this is kind of their spring crossover that might lead into some other stuff. Who knows? But this seems to be the new thing where they do the mini crossover in the spring and then the big crossover in the summer now.
That's right. And then they let it drag out so they can have their fourth quarter numbers bumped up at the end of the year.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. So when do you think Secret Empire is going to end? Do you want to make a bet on it?
It's too... let's get the first issue of whatever it is solicited.
Right.
Before we start laying down money, because all we have is a year and a title.
And I think it's guaranteed to be out before the end of that year.
The first issue or be completed?
I don't want to... I want to hedge my bets right now. I want to split.
There's a good chance the first issue will be out before 2017 is over.
Yes.
They've got 349 some odd days to get that first issue out, so I think they can swing it.
And I think this time they're going to put the end out because they have a better middle.
Oh, okay.
They want. You know what I mean?
Oh, they're going to publish it out of order, like maybe like a Checkmate Black or something?
Yes, because they're going to be like, well, we're just going to put the end out because I came up with a better middle, and I really want to see that to fruition. So, you never know.
Or maybe it's a deal where they do like a flash forward where like, oh, we're going to solicit issues 1 and 2 to double ship for, you know, the March, so we get those in at the end of the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Issue 2 is going to come out in April. Then issue 6 is going to come out in May. And everyone's going to be like, oh, what happened? Where's issues 4 and 5? Well, 4 and 5 we're going to get in November and December. Because we're going to do 1, 2, 3, skip 4 and 5, and then all of a sudden, like, all these allegiances are different in issue 6. And why is this person working with that person? And how and why did this happen? Or even better, they could put those two issues that they skip on, like, Marvel Unlimited or something.
That's a brilliant idea. And then, well, I'm just throwing stuff out there that you could add a 1 million issue, but that's just me.
All right.
A Secret Empire 1 million.
Well, let's not get into the tie-ins.
Oh, okay.
But all said and done, let's see what gets announced, who's involved, what creative teams. One would assume it's going to be Nick Spencer, but who really knows at this point?
Could be anyone.
I know it's definitely not me.
And I can't say if it's me or not because the 90 days isn't up.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the other changes, it's an all Marvel news week this week, is it appears as though starting next month, the usual Marvel way of getting your books is going to change for print people, that is. For a good chunk of print people, that is. So, for the last several years, when you purchase a print book for Marvel, you would get a little redemption code where you can get that book digitally as well. That apparently is no longer going to be the case. Starting next month, it is going to be changed to you are going to get one digital comic offered of one of three different collections that are upcoming. Old Man Logan, Captain Marvel, or Civil War 2. Then each week, new digital bonus codes, available only in your local shop, will offer fans additional pathways to the Marvel Universe, promote monthly trades, and create repeat retailer customers and Marvel readers for life, from the press release. Todd, as you would imagine, with the internet online community, this is going over swimmingly, and everyone's happy about this change. And they wish that they could implement this change tomorrow.
I believe that.
No, that's a lie, Todd.
Oh, you got me.
in the various reasons for this, of course, whether you're on the Marvel side of things, or you're on the retailer side of things, or you're on the reader side of things, I do know personally that there are people who sell those codes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a brisk business because you're paying... And the whole thing is Marvel's books, there are no $2.99 Marvel books. All Marvel books are $3.99 and up. And part of the reason that Marvel books are $3.99 and up is they claimed when they started doing this they said, by offering this digital code to you, we're adding additional value to the books to make them worth the $3.99 by giving you that digital copy of the very book you're purchasing.
Right.
Now, the question for me, as someone who purchases these books and redeems the codes for himself, because I like having those codes sometimes if I could build something up and I'm behind on something, instead of carrying the three or four extra books, I have them on my digital thing, I could pull them up and read them wherever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean, being that they're not offering us that additional value, are the books going to go down to $2.99?
I highly doubt it.
So the books are going to stay the same price at $3.99, and they're not going to give us anything extra? They're actually going to take stuff away from us.
You're getting that digital code for other stuff.
Right, but what if it's not stuff that I want, or it's stuff that I already have, because I purchased those books when they were offering the digital codes on those books?
Tough potatoes.
Oh, boy.
They'll have three things. Hopefully you won't have one of those things that you might not want to read. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I see, this is one of those stories that when it came across the wire, aka my phone,
right,
I was like, I really don't know. This is sad to say, as someone who hosts a podcast, I could care less, because I don't read my books digitally.
Right.
And I don't use the codes for anything. So the books were $3.99 and I was buying them anyway. So if they take the codes away and I'm still paying $3.99, how does that affect me? Do you know what I mean?
Right. And that's the thing is, you know, and that's what Marvel is going to find out. They're going to find out how many Todds they have,
mm-hmm,
and they're going to find out how many other folks they have.
And they better hope they're full of Todds out there.
I do know I've spoke to a couple people about this, and, you know, there are people who are saying that they may, part of the reason they were buying the books and the amounts and the frequency from Marvel that they were, was because of those codes, whether they redeemed them themselves or they shared them with a friend or what have you. They've said that, like, yeah, I'm going to cut my list because it's not cost effective for me now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out, because the real reason that they're doing this, of course, the reason that any company does anything is the bottom line in the box.
Wait a minute. When did it become a business?
What was the published date of Fantastic Four number one back in 1963? That's the exact day that it became a business.
Oh, not even the timely, before the timely comics?
No, nah, then they were just putting out Western and romance comics to amuse themselves.
And Human Torch comics. The right. Original, the synthetic man Human Torch, he doesn't count.
No, because he's not a real man. He's a synthetic man. Get out of here, fake man.
And right, and then the other one was the Submariner. So he didn't care. You didn't care about him because he was one of those undersea people. And,
he lives under the sea. Is he a mutant? Do we even know what mutants are?
He lives in a pineapple.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He makes hamburgers for some reason.
The only thing that could be worse for Marvel, though, is to take the codes out, keep them at $3.99, and then double ship them among.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, like have books twice a month or something.
Well, there is speculation now that we do know who, come this May, the new creative team on Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be. And that is, as I'm looking here, Jerry Duggan.
Mm-hmm.
And the artist is escaping me right now of who is taking over the art chores, but the art does look very pretty, I will say that. They're saying that book may ship monthly, or twice monthly. And then as people are digging through the solicitations and so forth, they're seeing that the X-Men books and a couple other things might be shipping twice monthly as well. Mm-hmm. Aaron Cooter, by the way, who was doing Action Comics, I don't know if currently, but possibly shortly. So, with them taking over the book and that book going twice monthly, some of the X books going twice monthly, there's speculation online that because of this, and because of them getting rid of the codes in the books, that they're going to go to $299, and a lot of people are saying that this might be Marvel's way to kind of ape the success that DC has been having with DC Rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which I think is a bad idea for Marvel right now.
Right.
Because of the fact, the only reason DC is getting away with their double shipping, like the two books a month, is that a bunch of them are really, really good. And the whole point with Marvel is if you're, you know, you're getting your butt handed to you by DC, unless they revamp a lot of these books and, you know, get, change things up, if they're not selling, you know, once a month, and even then they come out faster than that too at Marvel, or we're talking about Marvel saying, you know, we're going to ship it twice a month. There's a lot of books that I feel like I'm like, didn't I just read this yesterday? So I don't know. I don't know what their plan is, and I don't think it's going to be as successful. I think, you know, we joked about what, why DC was so successful is because it was the whole New Coke, Classic Coke thing. Like, it was so bad that anything would have been better, and they got lucky that a lot of it was really good. So I don't know. Unless you change up your creators and shake things up, it can't be the status quo what they're doing.
It's tough to say because Marvel is doing so well on the movie side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume that the movies probably make a little bit more money than the comic books do. That were they losing that badly in the market share and making the money off the comics that they are doing something this drastic?
I'm not saying that they were losing, but Marvel has to win, because I don't know of a time, too many times, where DC beat Marvel. Off the top of my head, somebody might fire in sales numbers. I don't know. But, you know, it's a competition. It is. You want to sell as much as you can. And as DC starts to eat up that market share, guess what happens to your market share? And regardless of how much money the movies make, it's not like DC movies didn't make money. So it all comes down to, like, the comic business is the comic business, and the movie business is the movie business. Like, the Hollywood people don't care what, you know, the comic, you know, publishers do, but the people who are just above the publishers, you better make more money. I don't know if that's making any sense as I say it. So, but, you know, they want to be number one in their business.
That's true.
Right. A long way around, but that's true.
But I don't know if this is going to... It's a risk. Mm-hmm. Just like DC took this past June. And I'm sure there were... If you go back and look, there was probably a lot of doomsayers of like, well, people aren't buying these DC books now at $3.99. They're not going to buy two a month at $2.99 because technically you're paying more for less story, blah blah blah, and you're going to have to do it, you know, twice a month or whatever it was. And here we are, you know, 6-7 months later, and DC's doing pretty well.
But it's a little different because DC still had $2.99 books before Rebirth.
They did, but not as many as one would think. Your big gun titles, your Batmans, your Supermans, your Justice Leagues, your stuff like that were $3.99.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, second tier and third tier books were $2.99, so it was less books to roll back to $2.99
mm-hmm.
than it would be for Marvel, where they would be rolling their entire line back to $2.99.
Right, that's what I'm saying, that it's slightly different.
It will be interesting to see how this all shakes out over the next couple months.
If I knew a place to get numbers, I would watch them closely, but I don't.
If only we had secret stooges and moles inside Marvel.
Oh, we need some of those.
We do.
Get some payola.
A place where we can make those connections, Todd, would be at comic conventions.
Ooh, nice segue.
Now, the two conventions that are happening this weekend are nowhere near us. If only we had some sort of mode of transportation where the two of us could get there very expensively and slowly.
The safest form of travel.
No, but the two conventions this weekend are both on the West Coast. One is called the Comic Excitement Convention, which is in Los Angeles, California. The only name guest that they had there is Sam Jones.
I know him.
And don't act like you know who he is, because you forgot.
He's Flash Gordon.
I hope he saves at least one of us.
He saves some of us.
Right.
As he gets older, that's his theme song.
I hope he saves at least one of us.
That's right. That was Queen, right?
That would be a miracle, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Queen. But the other one, the big one, is the Albuquerque Comic Convention happening in Albuquerque. I think that's New Mexico. I don't think there's an Albuquerque, Ohio. I wouldn't be surprised.
There could be.
But this one, Todd, is littered with comic guests and media guests. Comic side, you've got Peter David, you've got George Perez, you've got The Rob.
Ooh. He got his picture taken with, who's the gentleman who's going to be playing Lando Calrissian, and he was on Community?
I think his name is Donald Glover.
Yes, did you see that picture? Did you see the news that?
Yes.
Where he got a selfie taken with him. And the fan, the guy was like, oh, look at some fan. He's like, I'm the guy who created Deadpool. Okay, leave me alone.
A Mark photo, they called it.
That's right. And it wasn't even a selfie because somebody else was taking it.
I will say this. I don't see a lot of cons in our future for the year 2017.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that will sway me to go to a con within the three-mile radius. If he stops by the Kentucky Fried Chicken by my house.
Uh-huh. To schlep a Kentucky Fried Chicken comics?
Yes. Is in the 3-ish hour radius in which we live, if the Rob makes an appearance at one of those shows,
because
I want to try to get some FaceTime with the Rob.
Oh my goodness. Do you have a scheme, a get poor slow scheme to go?
I know a guy who's got a couple.
Oh boy.
No. I just think it would be cool to say, you know, because we've interviewed celebrities and creators on the show, and I think Rob would be a fun person to interview.
Yes, and I even have a photo with him.
Right, that's correct.
Greatest moment of my life.
But on the celebrity side, not to say that Rob Liefeld, George Perez, and Peter David are not celebrities, Tawny Katane is going to be at this convention.
Oh my goodness, I'm going to have her sign my Whitesnake video.
Tom Sizemore is going to be at this convention.
I'm going to have him sign some meth.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
And Ric Flair is going to be at this convention.
I don't know about that. I think it's Ric Flair's grandfather.
Now, I'm only mentioning those three celebrities together at random for no reason whatsoever.
Okay.
I'm not saying if you're attending this convention that you should hang out the hotel bar waiting for one or all three of these people to see what happens.
Oh, my goodness.
Because what you should be doing is getting the ultimate double mark photo with William Zabkin, Ralph Macchio.
Oh, my goodness.
That is the other goal, Todd.
Is if they're within the three-mile radius of your house?
If they're over at the Turkey Hill by the closed-down bridge, I'll take the long way around.
That's right.
And hope they're still there when I get there.
Oh, boy. Don't you have a grappling hook?
Yeah. That grappling hook's not going to be able to deal the tensile strength that the grappling hook can't deal with what I'm bringing to the table.
That's right.
So we'll have links to all these in the show notes, of course, as well as a link to the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com, where you can get links to all the shows in our fancy network of shows, everything from Fresher and Parlance, Puzzle Warriors 3. I know Profane Argument is off this week. I don't know. They got big things to do. They missed it quite a week to take off, too. Dealing with all things religious and political.
Mm-hmm.
An episode of Prime Defective escaped this week.
Oh, boy.
The best-reviewed Star Trek Next Generation podcast on all of iTunes.
Oh, my goodness.
They'll never listen to this.
What?
Talkin' Gimmicks had an episode this past week discussing the On After Dark mentioned WrestleMania 2 Battle Royal pitting professional football players against professional wrestlers.
That didn't happen.
All right. Podvocacy this week also reviewed a movie that I will not name, starring a man who I will not name. but has the distinction of being one of the worst comic book movies of all time, starring one of the worst actors of all time.
Oh.
Who and what could it be? You have to tune in to find out.
Probably could be somebody I think is a great actor, right. But I don't know.
And also check out friend of the show Mark Cole's podcast, The Winter Palace, where he had Matt Fraction on to talk baseball.
Hmm. That's an interesting choice.
I wonder if they discussed whether or not baseball was a work or not.
Oh, it is. Probably not. It's what? It is?
I didn't say anything. I think that was the ghost outside.
Oh, watch it. Your wife will get scared.
Oh, she knows. She's haunted.
Haunted by the love of you.
Oh, boy. So, check out those shows, and anytime any of the other shows go live, I'm only mentioning if you go live. Soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com.
Mm.
Also in those show notes are all the digital sales and freebies going on this week. IDW is having a sale on a bunch of their Godzilla comic books. Even some stuff that it looks like they might have acquired from Dark Horse. Dark Horse is having a sale on all things penned by Matt Kint. Boom is having a sale on their Bravest Warriors comic, which I think is somehow tied into Adventure Time. I don't know, because I'm not very smart when it comes to that sort of thing. Marvel is having a sale on the trades of Nova. They have three Nova Classic trades, it looks like from the 80s run, and then they have six trades from the Abnett and Lanning run, and that's some good comic booking right there.
That is.
When it gets into the War of Kings, Realm of Kings crossovers, your mileage may vary, but I would highly recommend at the very least those first two trades.
That's some prime Nova stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You could say it's Nova Prime.
Well, I think he's back.
Yeah, I think he is, yes. Yes. Richard Rider?
Yes. And Sam Shepard? Who's the little boy Nova who's in Champions?
Isn't Sam Shepard the guy that Tommy Lee Jones played in The Fugitive? And
oh, yes.
Also,
and he did the Mandible Claw?
Yes. I actually know that story, so stop it.
Are you making me stop because I'm telling the truth, Todd?
No.
Sam Alexander.
That's it.
Is the little boy Nova who says pew, pew, pew.
Who doesn't, though?
Ugh. But
okay.
DC is having a sale on what they call essential graphic novels or ebooks, but they're really called trades. and it's the top of the food chain, Todd. It's the big guns. It's Watchmen, it's The Killing Joke and other stories. It's Dark Knight Returns, it's Batman Year One, it's the first trade of Sandman, it's the first trade of Preacher. It's Batman Long Halloween, it's the first trade of Fables, it's Sandman Overture, and many, many more.
Yow, that's a murderer's row right there.
Right, and I'm just hitting the big guns, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't mention Hush, I didn't mention All-Star Superman, I didn't mention the first trade of Batman by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo.
I hate to tell you, you did mention all those just now.
Oh, I just did now, as the time loop snake is eating itself.
Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Don't get me started. You know how I feel about my Doctor Who.
That's right. Are you telling me to stop because I'm telling the truth?
No.
Is that why?
No. No new freebies, same freebies that we had a week ago. Nothing's been updated there. I'm doing a better job at keeping an eye on those sort of things. So check those out if you're going to get some free comics or some super cheap comics. Now, let's get into comics that we paid our hard-earned cash for in what we read this past week.
Right.
Todd, I'm going to have you go first since I've rambled and prattled on for quite some time.
Right, that's what you do. The book I read that I was looking forward to most that I read was The Fall and Rise of Captain Atom, written by Kerry Bates and drawn by Will Conrad. Basically, this... I'm thinking this actually takes place, I'm not sure where it takes place, if it's New 52 or Rebirth, because I read a little bit of the Captain Atom story back in New 52, and his powers were fluctuating back then too. But in this, is he's having problems with them, and him and the team, his the doctor who helped create him, and the general who controls him because he was part of a military project, realize that things are going south finally, and they're going to suppress him in this underground cavern, and hopefully he won't destroy everything. And then we get thrown back to how what kicked off his powers this time to go a little crazy, and it's a run-in with the Justice League. And as things go on, he does end up, spoiler alert, losing control of his powers, and he's you know, everybody thinks he's destroyed, but something happens that I don't want to mention too much more at the end of the issue that kind of makes me want to read more. And I'm wondering, too, they said there might have been, I didn't catch them, a couple of slight Watchmen mentions in this. And I'm wondering if in the end, at the end of this miniseries, it's going to tie into some of the Watchmen-esque things that are going on in the DC universe now. But I enjoyed it as a Captain Atom fan. I didn't think it's the strongest Captain Atom story, but the cliffhanger at the end makes me want to read more.
So is this a miniseries? Was this a one-shot? Is this an ongoing? What is this?
It's a miniseries. It actually says on the front, which I love that they do now, is in the corner, it has one of six at $2.99. So I like the fact that if it has that in the corner, and the Death of Hawkman has the same thing. If it doesn't have it, it's an ongoing. If it does, it tells you how many issues you have left to go. So it's a mini right now.
Gotcha. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I know you had said last week you were a sucker for Captain Atom, and you had gone into this with a little bit of trepidation.
Right. The only thing I don't like about him is he has fake wispy hair, which you won't
fake
know.
Fake wispy hair?
Yes, because he's kind of like giving off like energy emissions. So he has this like weird, it looks like smoke coming off his head, but it looks like weird wispy hair.
I do know That's how all. I do know how you feel about people with questionable hair status.
That's right. Realistic fake hair is out the door, and real wispy hair is out the door, too.
Oh, my goodness. So, the book that I read this past week, I didn't read your book, and you didn't read my book. And my book was one of those ones that wasn't even on my initial list. It was one that, in between us recording the show and me going to actually pick up my books, I was texted by people. I saw a lot of people discussing the book online. And I'm like, oh, it's a new number one. Let's check it out. And that would be The Unstoppable Wasp, number one from Marvel, with art by Elsa Chartier and written by Jeremy Whitley. Now, I did not know this going into this. For some reason, this was a book that was just kind of like out of my purview, right? But Jeremy Whitley is he has done some stuff for IDW's My Little Pony, but he is also the creator of Princeless for Action Lab Comics, which is a very good series. And this is a series that he has, you know, the creator on, well, boy, this has been out for quite some time. But this is a book essentially about, you know, a princess that does not need to be saved by some schmo. And him being the writer on that, I think, if I knew that going in, this book probably would have been more so on my radar than it was before. And I think not knowing that beforehand, or knowing that beforehand, might have made me like the book more than I did, but I liked this book quite a bit. It ties Wasp into what we saw as her origin story from the pages of Avengers, before the reshuffle, or the all-new, all-different Avengers, where she kind of debuted. Her origin story, of course, being that she is Hank Pym's daughter, but with Hank Pym's wife before he was with Janet. She got shuffled off by Russian such-and-such, and she was part of that Red Room project that Black Widow was part of.
Interesting.
But because she was less adept at the killing and more adept at the science, and they put her to work doing that, she was able to figure out on her lonesome with whatever things cobbled together in a room in Russia she was able to distill Pym particles from there, and that's how she was able to escape.
So she's like a MacGyver.
No, she's good, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm only ribbing you. I'm giving you MacGyver fans a gentle ribbon.
Okay.
But there's a lot of science-y stuff in this book. There's a lot of fun in this book. And the one thing that was weird to me at first, but grew on me as the issue grew on, and I think the reason it was weird to me at first was, in her previous other appearances in All New, All Different Avengers, she was not written as though she spoke what we as Americans think a Russian who speaks English talks like. Does that make sense?
I think I'm grasping what you're trying to say.
Right, like her articles and prepositions are out of place. When it's something of pop culture that comes up, like there's a giant robot that's attacking the city, Mockingbird is trying to take it down, Wasp figures out a way to stop it, she enlists the help of Miss Marvel, she tells Miss Marvel what to do, Miss Marvel says, oh yeah, just like in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And she just says, I know not why the Empires are striking us back, but let's do it.
Okay.
Whereas in popular culture, when it's someone from a different culture and they're speaking English, they don't get it quite right.
Gotcha.
And they're repeating something back, and she didn't speak that way, or she wasn't written to speak that way in All New, All Different Avengers, so it did take a little while to get used to. But the thing that I enjoyed the most about this book was the brightness and optimism that the character was written as, even in the face of giant robots, or having to get citizenship, or the little tasks, or the tasks that she had, no matter how big or small they were. Nadia is written to take these things on with a smile, and in the book she is written as her cheerfulness is infectious to those around her, and me reading the book, I felt good about myself.
Well, that's good.
How do you like that?
Very good. So, does she do any, like, in Russia, particles, Pym you?
No.
No? Okay.
Right, that's and the other end of the spectrum of how she would have been written if this book was published in the early 80s.
Right. And then I have one important question about the whole story.
Go ahead.
Did anybody stop her?
No, no one stopped her.
So she was really unstoppable.
You cannot take this title and say they did not deliver what they promised. They said she would not be stopped, and she was not stopped.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because if she was stopped, I wouldn't want to pay good money for that.
You would have taken it back and demanded your money back?
That's right, I'd be like, she was stopped right here in this panel, stopped.
Oh, you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. Mm-hmm. Todd and I, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up over at longboxheroes.com the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your house, whether you get them in trade, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, be prepared, get your books, and be ready. And just like we've always done over these past several years, Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out. And if you head over there, you'll see the running tally of how many DC, how many Marvel, how many Image, and as other publishers, your Marvels, your Archies, your Dark Horses, etc., show up on the list. You'll see that continue to grow over the course of the year.
And it's weird. I'm looking at our numbers, mm-hmm. and even though all our numbers are mixed up, because I have more DC than we have the same. I think if I'm doing the math correctly, we have the same amount of books since the beginning of the year.
That's correct.
That's fantastic.
That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So as we always do, we attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out. Since we're only 2 weeks into the year, we've only had one episode of doing this, and Todd has the lead with one correct guess.
That's right. I've been leading the whole year.
Right. So since you started the show, you guess first.
That's right. I'm looking over the list.
All right.
And I see many books. But I'm going to take a swing and say the book you're looking forward to most is something we haven't seen in a while, Southern Bastards number 16.
You would be correct. Wow. That is the book that I'm most looking forward to coming out this week, and I'm also going to guess that it's the same book for you as well.
You are also correct.
Yeah, buddy. Ice Cream Man. Where's my son? Oh, he's been asleep for like 3 hours.
Okay.
Jason Latour, Jason Aaron, book returning. I'm looking forward to see what happens next to this book. The slow burn continues, and I love it.
Remember, long fuse, but big explosion.
Oh, boy. When it's Jason Aaron, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Meat eater.
So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out everything else that we have over there, whether it be past pull posts to see, make sure you're getting your books if you're a couple weeks late on going to get them, whether it be past episodes of this show, past episodes of After Dark. Everything that we've ever done is collected over there at longboxheroes.com, as is the little button for the store where you can purchase t-shirts or stickers with our fancy logo on them, so you could show them off to your friends how cool Tom Derenick's art is. If you already have stickers, you already have shirts, maybe you don't need any of those things for whatever reason, and I don't know why you would or wouldn't. Everybody needs stickers and shirts all the time. You can click the Amazon link at the top of the page, because everybody needs something from Amazon. Whether, like many of our listeners this past week, have purchased Manhattan Season 2. I don't know what that is.
Neither do I.
And continuing the trend from last week, someone purchased a Transformers Generation Combiner Wars Series PK Bruticus action figure.
Bruticus. Isn't that a pizza place in Old Forge?
I thought you were going to make a Bruticus the Barber Beefcake reference.
Ah,
alas. What do you know about professional wrestling? Nothing.
Other than it poisons the eyes, nothing.
And it makes your soul feel good.
So
thanks to everyone who purchased something through our Amazon link this past week, or ever in the history of this show. We greatly appreciate it. Every little bit counts.
Yes.
So, let's get into the newest segment of the show, and I tell you, we're getting a lot more responses to this. A lot of people suggesting books and stuff, and we greatly appreciate you suggesting books, of course. Because we do have kind of like a dummied up master list. But it's always subject to be altered or changed or otherwise.
Right.
And this week's reading choice was Swamp Thing 21, The Anatomy Lesson. And we did have some remarks on this and new commenters as well, kind of getting into how important and the Swamp Thing run was and how it was a missing hole in their run. And, you know, thanking us for doing something a little bit different. And yes. I've been getting a lot of thanks of this privately as well. And this was Todd. Was this one your idea?
I'm going to say yes.
All right. You take if at any time I ever say, was this your idea, just assume I forgot and just take credit for it.
I don't like doing that. I know we're joking around, but this one was mine. I think I even have the email to prove it.
Okay. So all thanks to Todd for this one. So, Swamp Thing number 21, and as I mentioned in my little write-up on this one, I did not read this when this first came out. Did you read this when it first came out?
No, not when it came out. I went back and got all the Alan Moore Swamp Things.
Mm-hmm. Right, so you probably read this way, way before I did, because I did not read this probably until... Oh boy, if I was to guess... It was probably like 2001, 2002, maybe.
I read it before then, but I don't want to say I'm looking at the cover date now.
I think this was 82.
Well, 84.
84, but, yes. I'm sorry, 84. The movie was 82. That's what it was.
Oh, yeah. Don't cut. And then the sequel. But I'm trying to remember when I was reading this, because... Joe, we're old. I don't know if you know that. And there wasn't a lot of trade paperbacks back in the day when I wanted to read this. So I had to go not to eBay, but from con to con and comic shops wherever I went to cobble together a Swamp Thing collection. So it took me a long time to read it. It wasn't into it like as late as you did. It was probably mid-90s somewhere by the time I got most of the Alan Moore run and read this. So, but I was in my probably, maybe it was even early 90s. I was probably just getting out of high school. I was in that perfect age to read Alan Moore and what would, which is definitively, in my mind, the beginning of Vertigo, is this issue right here.
Okay. While I agree with you, Vertigo does not start until 89.
Right.
So this is now some, you know, 5 years before there. And this would later become a Vertigo book. It would kind of get enveloped into Vertigo just like Sandman did.
Right.
While I think this, pun intended, planted the seed for what Vertigo would become.
I love that, but go ahead.
It would not be until Sandman for that seed to fully blossom into the beautiful flower that Vertigo is today.
I know what you're saying, but I think you're looking at it. We're looking at it the same way, but you're looking at it as a flower, where I'm looking at Saga of the Swamp Thing 21 as the seed that grows the forest instead of a plant.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like, this is it. Without this, there is no Neil Gaiman trying to write like Alan Moore for those first six or seven issues of Sandman.
I get that now. Touche.
And all that other stuff. Doom Patrol, whether you're a fan of Grant Morrison or not, all the stuff. And I even said if it had gone on longer, the Green Arrow story that was suggested for Mature Readers title, and all that other stuff that becomes the Vertigo Forest that seems has to been deforested now, this is where it all begins. This is, to me, the like literally the first seed, all pun intended.
So prior to this, Swamp Thing was a horror comic, but with like
it's still
super, it was a horror comic, but more like a superhero element. It was kind of like the Marvel horror comics of the 70s,
right? Where Alec Holland, he was a scientist who was creating this vegetable growth hormone. Another group of company wanted it, so they attack it. They try to get it. He gets blown up, and this formula changes him into this walking swamp monster, which was pretty much the story all the way up till Alan Moore got his hands on this issue.
Right. In rereading this, of course, you know how you talked about trying to get the collection and all that sort of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
For me, DC started to re-put this out in trades, and that's when I started reading it. I picked up, like, the first trade or second trade, and if you remember, this is stuff that had been back collected, but they would still take, like, 4 to 6 months in between trades.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up getting single issues of those because I just couldn't wait. I couldn't wait for them to come out. So as I'm getting the trades as they're coming out, I'm also getting the single issues. And then as I'm getting the trades, I'm pawning the single issues off to other people.
Wow.
So getting back to this. So in this issue is essentially when we find out through Jason Woodrue, the Floronic Man, still keeping some ties in the superhero world, as this book would continue to do. Wasn't like Swamp Thing even in Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Oh yeah, that whole American Gothic story was a lead up to Crisis on Infinite Earth. Like, that's one of those, the best, like, Alan Moore tied into Crisis, and he did it well. I think he's, like, one of, like, three guys who did it, and it works. But, yes.
So Jason Woodrue, the Floronic Man, finds out because this other company, you know, it's not the same company that bumped off Alec Holland. It's a different company. It's a guy who in 1984 was so impressed that his little screen, the size of a tablet, was able to control his entire building.
Mm-hmm.
Future.
That's right. I wonder if it had a handy holder on it.
Oh my goodness. But that's one of those things that, like, someone would see in 1984 and like, oh, that's impossible. That would only, you know, that's something that would be reserved for only the five richest kings in Europe.
Mm-hmm. In the Middle East with oil money. That's where it's at.
So he hires... there was some sort of people that went and gunned down Swamp Thing, effectively killing him. They put him on ice. They brought him back to this building. He gets the Floronic Man to come, and because he's a scientist, and he's also got some plant stuff involved with him, figure out how to resynthesize whatever turned Alec Holland into Swamp Thing.
Right.
And tell me how to do it. I'm not a smart man. You figure out, and you just tell me how to do it, and I'm going to do it.
Right. And as the Floronic Man, he's like, I'm part man, part plant. This is a great, you know, opportunity for me to learn more about myself. And as he's thinking about it, he realizes that the formula didn't change Holland into a plant. It changed the plants into a fake Holland, which is blew my mind the first time I ever read this. It was like, okay, it's a ghost image of what Alec was. He's like, the brain is fake. He died. And when the formula mixed with these plants, it changed the plants, not Alec. And he becomes, they become a dark, you know, not a dark, but a fake copy of Alec Holland. And he's living off the memories of what he thought he was. And I'm like, this is brilliant. Setting up one of the greatest runs in comic book history. And I just can't get over how good it was. And then while all this is going on, it's told in a flashback from Woodrow's point of view, the Floronic Man, and he keeps bringing up like how much blood Old Man Sunderland is going to have, which, by the way, is the big company that it was all the way in like Scott Snyder's Swamp Thing. Like Sunderland keeps popping up. And I absolutely love that. But he's like, oh, like, is there going to be a lot of blood when it happens? And you're like, what's going to happen? And that's one of the brilliant things of Alan Moore telling the story is he keeps, like, dropping hints to where this story is going to lead. And then when Alec Holland Swamp Thing finds out from the files, oh, my God, one of my favorite scenes of all time is when Old Man Sunderland just goes, you saw the files, right? And he's just staring at him with, like, Todelman eyes, these crazy John Todelman drawn eyes. And he goes, and he just looks at him and he's like, what'd you think? And Swamp Thing loses his mind, just goes absolutely crazy. And it's terrifying as Swamp Thing chases the old man down. Just, I got goosebumps.
It's a really good story. It is awesome. For me, the thing that sticks out to me is there's a book, 1984, that there's so much about this book that's of its time in a good way. And by that I mean, I think the art adds to the horror and the grossness of this.
Oh, yes.
Whereas if this was a book that came out at any other time, I don't think it would have the same depth or the same feel to it.
The only other place that it would have the same depth and feel is if this book was written by the EC horror guys. Like, that is the only other time, like, in the 50s when they got their message across. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But anyway, sorry I interrupted.
No, it's okay. So the other thing is where if this was any other comic book, any other writer, I think even today... to some extent, is, you know, as Todd had mentioned, the big reveal in this is Alec Holland did not become a plant monster. A plant or a group of plants or something attempted to become a human man based on what was left of Alec Holland.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a book today, we would not get the as in-depth explanation of it as we got in this. And that's, you know, why last week or a week before we kind of gave Alan Moore a little gentle ribbing, of course. I'm sure he could take it.
Mm-hmm.
But just the ingeniousness is like Woodrow is dissecting Swamp Thing and he's pulling out the lungs and he's pulling out the heart and he's pulling out all this stuff. And then when he figures it out that, like, they're not real. They're just what the plants created to try to think. It's like, well, this human that we, you know, enveloped into ourselves, had a heart and had lungs and had it. So we need to recreate those to the best we can.
Right. They're trying to emulate what a human is.
Right. And in any other comic book, they would have just said, oh, it's a plant trying to be a man, and not mm-hmm. given you so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And also the worm stuff, how, like, the worm was trained to what were the type of worms? I forget right now.
I forget what they were. I had the book out. Right. Platen worms or something like that?
Planaran worms or something like that. Whatever right. it was. So the worm was, like, taught to, like, and that's how he figured it out. You know, he used that as the example, trying to explain it to the guy, and the guy's just like, I don't want to hear any of this nonsense. Don't tell me the science mumbo-jumbo, just tell me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is like, it's what I think a good solo issue story is and could be, in that it stands on its own, it tells a story beginning, middle, and end, but it's also a jumping-off point that it is so good that if you want more of it, there is more of it out there, of exactly what we just gave you here.
And there's a lot more of that, like, kind of, there's a bunch of those one issues and done.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's the, and I could see some of them creeping up into future Todd and Joe have issues. Like, to me, there's the Boogeyman issue, which later gets, you know, paid off again in Sandman. And there's, to me, the take on the Winchester house. There's a lot of one-shot, just like when Alan Moore, when I say this, Alan Moore was channeling those EC horror stories. There was, you know, one, there's the weird, like, twist ending, and usually he lands those twist endings amazingly. And that's why I think it holds up. And then when you hit, like, American Gothic, it's a huge tie-in and stuff like that. And then we even get John Constantine out of all this. One of possibly, like, you know, one of the greatest magician characters, sleazy con men, my favorite, looks like Sting, but we can't say it so we don't get sued, kind of a thing. just so many brilliant ideas. And then when he becomes the plant elemental, I mean, yeah, like, he had the long game going on with
yep.
this. So, I love this book.
Great issue. Great run of any comic in the history of comics.
Mm-hmm.
Next week's book, the one that we'll be discussing, is going to be Spider-Man Tangled Web number 4. The Ooh. Story itself is called Severance Package. Tangled Web was a, I don't want to say mini-series, I don't want to say maxi-series, it only went about 25 issues. It was a bunch of small Spider-Man stories, whether it be 3 issues, 1 issue, 2 issues, whatever it was, by a whole bunch of different creators. I know the first 3 issues was done by Garth Ennis and John McCrae. This issue in particular is being done by, or was done by Greg Rucka and Eduardo Risso, who did, was that, am I correct in stating that?
I don't know who the creators are, but if you're asking who Eduardo, is it, or is he the one who works with Azzarello?
Yeah, I think I could be wrong when I say, right, it is Greg Rucka and Eduardo Risso.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a Kingpin story. It's a Spider-Man story. It's a one-and-done story. And through no hyperbole, it's one of my favorite Kingpin stories of all time.
Huh.
That's why it's on the list.
Which is interesting, because this is one of those books that we're getting early on in this experiment that we've come up with, is a book that you really enjoy and I've never read.
Well, maybe so, next week you're going to throw something at me that you really enjoy and I've never read.
Could be. Or not, we'll see.
Who knows what next week will bring?
We spin the wheel.
The one thing that I know that it will bring is another episode of this show. And we do thank you for tuning in to episode 328 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.